Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hey everyone, it's Jonathan Cohn at The Bulwark. You know, we've been talking a lot about RFK Jr., what he's doing in vaccines, what's happening at the CDC, but there is a whole other part to his agenda, which is about food. It's interesting. There's things to see there that maybe there's some good parts, bad parts. Sifting through all that is complicated. We have the perfect guest today to do that. It is Sam Cass. If you follow food, if you watch the cooking channel, if you remember the Obama years, you may know him. He was a chef in the Obama White House. He was also a senior policy advisor on nutrition policy for the Obama White House, an executive director of the Let's Move initiative that was run by the First Lady. Since then, he's gone off into the private sector, but he is also the author of a brand new book called The Last Supper: How to Overcome the Coming Food Crisis. Sam, I'm so glad you're here to help us sort through these issues.
It's great. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Now there's actually, I say there's an alternative universe, right? Where actually you're not in food. You play for the White Sox. I looked up, you played college baseball, and I think I saw you had a 366 lifetime average, the University of Chicago. Is that right?
Yeah. I was trying to get drafted. I actually went to junior college for a couple years before then. In the hopes of making it to the major leagues, much to my mother's chagrin. But eventually, you know, I went to U of C and then sort of hung up the cleat, so to speak, although I played there.
Hung up the cleats, yeah. Well, you did okay. You did okay. Now, how did you get to food? I mean, I heard this story once, so that was interesting. I mean, how did that happen? Because, I mean, baseball to food, not a typical trajectory.
Yeah, not at all. So I was finishing University of Chicago, and I had a semester left. And I'd always loved to cook, and I felt like, you know, one day I should go to culinary school because if you know how to cook, your life's better, you know, if you can feed yourself and feed your future family. And so I said that to the head, I said that to a friend of mine, boyfriend, who was a chef. And so he invited me into a kitchen in Chicago. I basically showed up at this Italian-American restaurant and just started helping out because he was like, don't go to culinary school. It's a waste of your money. It's super expensive. Just come hang out in the kitchen. And so then I had a great time, although I didn't know anything. It was kind of a disaster. Had one semester left and went to, got into an abroad program in Vienna and ended up through a very random connection, got introduced to the sous chef of the best restaurant in Vienna. And they offered for me to come in and just hang out and stage, they call it, just volunteer.
So these terms now mean something to me.
Yeah, that episode about when they went overseas to do the training was like hit so close to home. So that was basically my life.
Oh, really? Okay, that was realistic. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I worked for free. I would wake up and go work the lunch service, then I'd run to class, and then for 2 hours, and then work dinner service, and then drink with the chefs late into the night, and do it all again the next day.
Uh-huh. And then, so how do you end up at the White House? Like, what is the short version of that?
The very short version of that is like actually in that training, I started realizing, you know, how much our food system was undermining our health and also starting to undermine and erode sort of planetary health. And so I started doing deep dives into every book I could read around these issues around agriculture and food policy. And it was, you know, very nascent back then. So I ended up after sort of cooking and traveling around the world for about 5 years, but really focusing in on these issues, less around recipe, you know, like what's the next recipe I could figure out how to make. I came back to Chicago, coincidentally, right after the Obamas had, or the, you know, then Senator Obama had launched the campaign for presidency. And and got connected with Michelle. And, you know, it was just grandma. They didn't have like any kind of staff or team. And she had two young kids. So I started helping them out during the campaign a couple, you know, a few nights a week. And, you know, was talking about all the issues that families were facing and all the challenges and the health crisis we were in. And so we sort of decided to take on these issues if we were so lucky to get to the White House. And we actually got very all caught up one night getting like, you know, very excited about, you know, we could plant a garden and then do this big health initiative. It's going to be amazing. And then we realized like, oh, this guy's 30 points down the polls. Like she writes about this in her book. And it's like, this, what are we talking about? We started laughing at ourselves, but the rest was history.
Yeah, yeah. So the agenda, the food, I mean, the people don't, you know, they think about healthcare, they think about, you know, financial agenda. Well, the food agenda in the Obama administration, there was a lot of work you guys did. I mean, there was it was a pretty ambitious agenda. Sum up, like, what were the goals? I mean, what was the sort of, what were you trying to do?
We were trying to transform the health of the nation. You know, we were doing it in a different time than we find ourselves today. We focused in on kids and kids' health because it was much harder to fight against, you know, trying to improve the health of children than, you know, it's sort of like, who's against that? And so, like, just politically and strategically, that's where we focus. But also from an intervention standpoint, you'll have the biggest impact the younger you start in terms of trying to improve people's health and get them on the right trajectory. But, yeah, we were looking to make, you know, fundamentally shift the health of the country, make these issues relevant to people, have them understand the connection between their food and their health, and try to change the way we feed ourselves. And I think we made a tremendous amount of progress. Obviously, you know, tackling a problem as massive and entrenched as our food system is takes generations. So you're never going to get there in a couple terms. But I think we got a lot done.
So when we talk about what was missing for kids, and I know this is, I mean, this is half your book, so it's hard to summarize, but I mean, to what extent is it kids not getting the right stuff, too much of the bad stuff, the way the food is produced itself is bad for them? Is it all of those things? I mean, what are we talking about?
Yeah, it's all of that and more. I mean, I think basically our food environments are setting people up for failure. You know, the 80% of the foods we're on the shelves are not classified as healthy. We aren't allocating enough resources to feed our kids in schools, or certainly to support the nutritional needs of the most vulnerable in the country. And just generally, you know, we are prioritizing as a culture, you know, taste and convenience first and foremost, and cost. And so it's providing, you know, we're providing people with mostly unhealthy, empty calories, you know, that are, you know, chock full of sugar and fat and salt. And we're not getting the kind of nutrient density that we need in the bites that we're having. And that's playing out kind of in every quarter of the system. And that's on the health side. And then on the environmental side, you know, food and agriculture is the number two driver of emissions globally. Number one driver of deforestation and land use change and biodiversity loss, number one use of the world's fresh water. And it's being pummeled by climate. And so it's both a driver of environmental degradation and on the front lines of it and really being challenged. And so we have a lot of work to do if we're going to create a food environment and a food system that is both supporting the well-being of the citizenry as well as protecting our ability to feed future generations in the way that, you know, we've been fed. Even the status quo now, which is wildly unacceptable, is under threat given the realization of what climate's already starting to do to our food system.
Now, you said a minute ago, you know, you focus on kids because, you know, who could be against good health for kids? And that's right. No one's against good health for kids. But I remember very distinctly
that's wrong.
A ton of flack over this, you know, and there were effort. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but I mean, it seemed like there was a lot of pushback, my recollection, and you know, a lot of this was, you know, Michelle Obama wagging her finger at what you wanted to eat. And I mean, am I wrong? Did I imagine all that?
No. It given where things are right now, I feel like I'm living in the upside down, because back then, the GOP fought us on absolutely everything. I mean, there wasn't a thing we tried to do that wasn't you know, criticized, critiqued, both on the Hill and, you know, all the various conservative network, you know, Fox and the rest.
What's an example? Like, what was something you got pushback on?
Oh, I mean, Sarah Palin was like passing out cookies and saying, get the nanny state out of our house. Michelle Obama, like, you know, you have no business telling us what to eat. There's clips after clip. Everything we tried to do saw resistance. We had, you know, people on Capitol Hill, Republicans pushing back and trying to, you know, tie our hands on school nutrition reform or any of the other things we were trying to do.
Bulwark Takes is sponsored by ZocDoc. Remember that doctor's appointment you were supposed to make a while ago? That one you meant to book, but you got kind of sidetracked and completely forgot about it until now? You know that overdue annual checkup that's been about 3 years in the making? I know one of the huge bottlenecks is actually finding a provider and being able to get on their calendar. So ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high quality in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. With more than 100,000 doctors across every specialty, I'm going to repeat that, 100,000 doctors across every specialty, from mental health to dental health, primary care to urgent care, and more. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance, are located nearby, are a good fit for any medical need you may have, and are highly rated by verified patients. Once you find the right doctor, you can see their actual appointment openings, choose a time slot that works for you, and click to instantly book a visit. Appointments made through ZocDoc also happen fast, typically within just 24 to 72 hours of booking. More often than not, you can even get same-day appointments. Stop putting off those doctor appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/BulwarkTakes to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/BulwarkTakes. ZocDoc.com/BulwarkTakes.
Well, let's zoom ahead, right? Now we have a new administration. We have a Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He talks all about food. I've heard him up there. He's doing things on food dyes and seed oils and you know, this is his, you know, his mantra, making America healthy again. He wants people to eat better. So that sounds great, right? I mean, isn't that what you were talking about?
Yes, I'd say the critique. I think.
Yeah, let's say the broad view is the critique he's giving. How does that sound?
Yes, I think the critique is largely right. I mean, I think, you know, at times I feel like he overstates some things. The conspiratorial nature of some of the way he lays out his critique sometimes I think is just not accurate. Some, by the way, is. I mean, you know, this is, I'm not naive. I've been in the trenches for a long time. So I think, you know, the critique is largely one that I agree with and one that has been, that we were saying back then and has been, you know, been discussed by many authors and critics for a long time. So I think there's a lot of similarities there. And I think that critique, one is an important one, and two is evocative for those of us who really care about this issue and are doing work, you know, in the trenches in different parts of society. And it's important and exciting when somebody in a position of real power is uttering this critique. And I think that's why he's been able to get a lot of people to come be supportive of this administration, including friends of mine who otherwise would never get behind what's going on, but they see this issue as their most important issue and are willing to support what's happening here, you know, despite the rest. I take big issue. I got a lot of problems with that, but I do understand why people find that exciting. After that point, it all falls apart, like, yeah, dramatically.
How so?
Where to even start? First of all, I'd say, I'll just start with what's happening externally and then what's that's covering up that's happening behind the scenes. Externally, the reason it falls apart is none of the issues that they're actually working on is going to make an iota of difference to the health of the nation. Let's just start with food dyes. You know, Fruit Loops with food dyes, Fruit Loops without food dyes is still not something you probably should be feeding your kids. There's still Fruit Loops. Like, I'm not like some big supporter of food dyes. Like, I'm happy to see them go, but you will see absolutely no difference in the public health whether they're there or not. They are just not the problem. Seed oils. You know, this the influencer ecosystem that has been built is very powerful and convincing. These guys are very good at picking some study that casts some bit of doubt on something, overstate what that study, is actually claiming when you read it, and create this whole fear-based ecosystem of this ingredient or that ingredient is going to kill you or is killing you. Cedo is the perfect example. It even got me, like, I had to go back. I was like, did I get this one wrong? Like, maybe I've been missing this whole time. And I had to go back and, like, review all the studies and talk to a bunch of experts and realize, like, yeah, no, this is complete bullshit. Like, seed oils are not dangerous. In fact, they are, study after study, better than saturated fat. And we have the head of HHS going to fast food restaurants touting cheeseburgers and french fries as healthy because they were fried in beef tallow. I mean, it's just insane. It's absolutely insane. So none of what they focused on so far is going to have any impact positively on public health. In fact, on that issue actually could move us backwards. The reports that they've been promoting, have absolutely no fidelity in them, no details. And they're just not addressing any of the core issues that are would have a positive impact on our health. What makes that much worse is that behind the scenes, they're destroying the institutions that are actually there to help move us in a better direction. They're gutting the CDC, they're gutted FDA, they've destroyed NIH, and same with USDA. I mean, USDA is being completely dismantled from the inside out. It's under this mantra of, we care about your kids, we're working to get these toxic things out of your food. None of that's really happening. And behind the scenes, the regulatory agencies that would be in charge of this to actually try to make progress are all being gutted and decimated. It's a complete travesty. And I think he's just hoodwinking the American public. I think, like, that's the food side. Then what you see, they're kind of laundering the rest of the behavior of this administration. You could take Tylenol and then into vaccines. And I think when you start to understand what's happening there, I think he is unequivocally the biggest threat to public health the United States has ever faced. The implications of what's happening in those areas are so scary for all parents. And I'm a father of two kids, two boys, 8 and 6. It is hard to overstate the implication here, what's happening. And the food side is really like what brings the suburban mom and the person who's worried about their kids. Oh, look, they're fighting for us. Like, I can trust them. Like, they're doing it, and they bring them into the tent. But really what's happening is calamity when it comes to the health of the country. I cannot overstate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the seed oil, when you were describing going back to the studies on seed oil, I've had that experience with some of the vaccines where, they're talking about, I'm like, wait a minute, I've done the deep dive on these studies. Did I miss something? And I go back like, no. They're cherry picking this number and that number and putting things together. One thing they've emphasized, I know, is sort of nutrition standards for SNAP and for school lunches. Of course, that's not all that's going on with SNAP and school lunches. At least with SNAP, we're about to have the biggest cut in food assistance in history. How does that net out? I mean, if we have on the one hand, if they're sort of theoretically upgrading the standards for SNAP, but then they're cutting the money that's going into SNAP, what does that mean?
Yeah, this is all a ruse to try to, restrict benefits for poor people. It's just full stop. And this is nothing new. I was fighting this fight every cycle, every budget cycle when I was in the White House. I'm personally, as a public health advocate and somebody who's been working on the policy for a long time, I'm empathetic and think there is a path where some standards around SNAP benefits could be in the best interest of taxpayers and of the public. You can only do that, however, if you are meaningfully increasing the benefit, because right now it's simply nowhere near enough money to buy healthy food. Right now, the way that they actually calculate how much people should be compensated for nutrition assistance is based on sort of a sketched out diet. And right now it includes like 40 servings of beans. That, don't quote me exactly, it's not exactly that number, but it's like, you gotta eat a ton of beans because they're cheap and it's like the only thing you're eating, but nobody can eat like that. And so the benefit is just way too small to actually purchase, nutritious food. So if we were willing to meaningfully increase the benefit, I would be open to finding some ways to, you know, have the most egregious, like, you know, soda or candy bars to be restricted. Until you do that, this is just a yet another in a long series of efforts to pull back and push down programs that are supporting poor people in America. And it's unconscionable. It is absolutely, given who's in office, it's just, how dare they go after people who are just barely hanging on and try to strip these benefits.
I was thinking, you know, just thinking ahead, because I'm an optimist, hopeless one. And so thinking to a time when we might have either a change of heart from this leadership or different leadership in the White House and what an agenda might look like. And your book is that. It lays out an agenda. You can't summarize it in 2 minutes, I know, but just talk a little bit about the fact that, I mean, it's a food agenda, but also a climate agenda, right? I mean, it's really the marriage of those two.
I'm happy you're an optimist. I mean, I'm hopeful, but not necessarily optimistic. Look, when you look at what's happening to our food system and the impacts of climate change, many of the foods we love and hold dear, like coffee, wine, chocolate, shellfish, crustaceans, stone fruit, nuts, like a long list of, like, you know, foods that we're eating frequently, are really under threat and may not be available, at least at a price point that most people can afford, you know, in our lifetimes, let alone our kids and grandkids' lifetimes. And that's not taking into account then what's going to happen to the big commodities like rice, especially. Over 3.5 billion people depend on a daily basis for rice as a core part of their diet. As climate, you know, makes that production and those yields come down, the implications for global stability, for food security, and then political stability, forced migrations and conflicts it's hard to actually wrap your mind around the implications.
I mean, security in both senses of the word, right? Security for individuals, but also affects like national security issues.
It is one of the animating issues that is, you know, national security experts in the future are gaming out and are very concerned about. And that's the other thing, I just have to bring it back to this administration. It's like, if you really care about making America healthy again, how can you possibly oversee the total gutting of every climate-related policy in government, pulling back every regulation on greenhouse gas emissions, but also at USDA, which was working to start to invest in setting our food system up for the volatility that we face ahead to help growers figure out how to produce food in a much more difficult climate. That's all been completely gutted. And there's, you know, the biggest threat I think we face to our public health is climate change. And if we're not aggressively taking this on, the future is going to be quite dire. I'm extremely concerned about it. I think when you step back and look at it, I just have to get this. You know, I think in the end, when you look at who we have leading this, we have a class action lawyer leading our public health system. And you already quickly saw Tylenol now get a massive lawsuit based on this finding from HHS. I think in the end, that's what this is about. This isn't about our health. This is about lawyers making a lot of money. And I think as we get out of this administration, that's what we're going to start to see. But the reality is the core issues that they've raised around our health and the future of our health is critical. And that's going to mean having real policies that improve the actual food that gets onto our plates and aggressively taking on climate so that future generations are going to be able to, you know, eat in the same way that we've been able to. And that's what's at stake. Our very way of life, when you start to get into what's happening in our food system, is truly under threat. We're seeing whole collapses of different crops or different species that regions have depended on. Like a couple of years ago, we lost 90% of the Georgia peach crop because of extreme weather. When you look at the models, you can give or take 10 years here. By the next 20, 30 years, there's probably not gonna be any peaches really grown in Georgia at all. Wow. It's just one example. I could give you hundreds of those examples. Really our way of life and our culture is really, you know, under threat here. So we need aggressive action. And that is absolutely not what we're seeing. In fact, quite the opposite.
Well, maybe if we're lucky, this at least the themes that are sort of being sound here that we all agree on will carry over past this administration and give us a head start. And definitely, if you want to learn more about this, I recommend Sam's book, The Last Supper, How to Overcome the Coming Food Crisis. Sam, thanks for spending time with us here at The Bulwark today.
Man, thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right. And if you like these kind of conversations and these issues, please think about subscribing to our YouTube channel, subscribe to our newsletters, and we'll see you next time.
SpinQuest Social Casino. The presents are open and you're over the in-laws. it's a perfect time to grab your phone and play SpinQuest.com with live dealer blackjack, craps, and a ton of slots. And here's a great deal for the holiday, a $30 coin pack for $10. And if you're hearing this ad, you can play right now on SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.